Welcome to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. Today we have a very special community conference call, which we host every once in a while. And I know many of us, especially people who support and listen to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, are distressed about the continuing wars for empire, wars for profit, just the death and destruction that has really been expanded during the Obama administration. And we're distressed because there's been very little response to that in the past 8 years. And we're in 6 or 7 countries right now bombing them. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, because I just had something weird happen. We're in 6 or 7 countries bombing them right now. I put out the call when I read that last year there was 23,144 bombs dropped by the U.S. on Muslim countries. Of course, they're expanding Cold War with Russia now. Obama has asked for billions, tens of billions, hundreds of billions of dollars for to expand the nuclear bomb program. That, you know, we all hoped that was being reduced and not expanded. And it's just, and now we have elections coming up. Every candidate in the Republican or Democratic Party are pro-war. They're pro-empire. And we see all the energy of movements, left-wing, right-wing, whatever, being sucked into the black hole of electoral politics. So what could our response be to that? What could we be doing to oppose empire? And I want to thank our presenters. We have Anthony Frieda, Deborah Sweet, Rose Brown, and Joe Valente. I will be introducing them when it's their turn to speak. And I'd like to thank you all for participating because I appreciate your consistency and your principles to be, everybody on this call I invited to speak are very anti-empire and have not backed down, and we've tried to do what we can. So our first speaker is Anthony Frieda. Anthony Frieda is a very good soapbox friend. He's an illustrator, an artist, and he makes wonderful art with a very anti-war and very anti-police state, social justice commentary, and he's very well known to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox listeners and supporters. So, Anthony, give us your thoughts.
Cindy, glad to be here. I think, you know, we have a problem. You know, I was in advertising for 10 years, and I learned a lot about branding techniques, and I think our biggest problem is the way we've been branded. I mean, the stereotype is this kind of weak, hippie, you know, love, peace, timid person that's in the anti-war movement. And we need to break out of that mold, and we need to break out of it and redefine our brand, redefine who we are and what we stand for and the way that we present our message. I mean, we are strong. We are fighting for humanity. We're fighting for the future and the soul of humanity. We're the defenders of humanity. Our enemies are the people who want to destroy humanity. They are psychopaths. And we are not cowards. We are not timid. You're one of the bravest people I've ever known in my life, standing up to this evil empire that you speak of so eloquently. And it is. I mean, it's the most, you know, the biggest empire of war, the best funded, the most technologically sophisticated war empire in human history. So it's very difficult. Obviously, it's a David and Goliath thing to have a peace movement stand up against this behemoth, this juggernaut of war, you know, that's this military, entertainment, information, media complex that we're up against is funded with trillions of dollars, and it's a powerhouse that it's almost impossible to counter. But we're still trying. You know, we're not going to give up because we have the moral high ground. And that's another problem. We're fighting a moral war in a political arena, and morality rarely, if ever, comes into play into politics. But we can transcend that. I think it really comes down to branding. You know, we have to rebrand ourselves. not only are we the good guys, not only do we have the moral high ground, but we have strength. People are attracted to strength. We are defending humanity. This is the way I look at it. You know, it really is in these terms. I mean, we have psychopaths that, I mean, they're on the verge of starting World War III. So how do we counter that? We have to get young people involved. And unfortunately, you know, partisanship has trumped everything when it comes to the anti-war movement. There was a huge anti-war movement against the Bush administration because people see things in partisan terms, you know. The left is traditionally the anti-war party, the Democrats. They went to sleep when Obama got into office. And it's very difficult to transcend that. I mean, it might be our best hope that a Republican gets elected, ironically, because the first day that Trump or some Republican bombs a hospital, there'll be tens of thousands of people on the street. So we have this intractable problem of partisanship and people going to sleep because Obama has left cover. I mean, the things he gets away with are just astounding to me. I mean, if Bush did half the things he did, it would be blood on the streets. A Republican just says one stupid thing and Democrats are screaming bloody murder. This guy's actually murdering people all over the world. Hillary gets away with God knows how many war crimes and laughs about it, and they don't care. So we have to frame the movement in a way that's, like I say, transcends partisan politics. This is about right and wrong, about good and evil. And we're not a bunch of wimps, all right? I know you're not a wimp. I know Gerald's not a wimp. We are people who are fighting, and we're strong, and we need to get that message. And it's, like, you know, it'd be nice if we had millions of dollars in for an advertising campaign. We don't have that. We have to be creative. We have to go to the grassroots. So how do we do that? We have to get the young people involved. And I've been talking to people. You know, Lisa Savage. She says young people are not interested in an anti-war message, but they are obsessed with the global warming message. So we can tie the anti-war movement to the global warming movement because the Pentagon is destroying the planet in many ways. So that's one way we can get young people engaged in this fight. I'm teaching right now at college level, and I'm trying to get this message across to the kids that, you know, this is their future. I mean, they're talking about, you know, sending women into combat now. They're talking about God knows what plans they have for this generation. I'm trying to personalize it. You have to personalize it and make people see how it's going to affect them on a personal level, how these kids' futures and their lives' futures are going to be impacted by the policies that are decided by psychopaths. These are psychopaths. We're not. We have to frame it in that literal context. I mean, the context that stark, that black and white. They're the bad guys. We're the good guys, and we're not afraid of them. Yes, they have all the power, but their power is evil. Their power brings nothing but death and destruction and hatred, and just this vicious cycle of. I mean, we're in the 21st century, and there's 12 countries bombing Syria. I mean, this is the best idea they have. The best and brightest in our world, the world leadership, the best idea they have is to just drop bombs on a problem. I mean, it's disgraceful. So obviously, humanity is not going to survive unless we transcend this paradigm that the solution to every problem is dropping bombs on it. To me and to you, it's so logical, it's so obvious, but for some reason, it's a tough sell, and that's because we're up against this behemoth, this incredibly powerful, the most powerful institution in human history. So it's very difficult, but I think we can transcend it. And I also think, you know, if Hillary gets elected, you know, we're done. It's over. They'll just roll over again, and she'll have left cover, and she'll, God knows what she'll do. I mean, she's basically Dick Cheney in drag. So we don't know what she's going to do. Obviously, Trump is a wild card. I don't know what he's going to do. Nobody knows. I don't even think he knows what he's going to do. But ironically, he might have right cover. He might be less of a hawk than she is, because maybe the same way the Democrats forgive Obama for all his war crimes and bombing hospitals. Maybe they'll forgive Trump for actually, you know, not bombing war hospitals and committing war crimes. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there. I know it's an unpopular idea, but like I say, we live in a land of hypocrisy. Nobody likes being called a hypocrite. That's our problem, because you can't confront this problem without calling people hypocrites. So it's very, very difficult, but we can't give up. There's so much at stake here, and I admire the efforts of everybody, of you and Gerald and so many other people that are putting their money and their treasure and their lives and their family and their honor and their, everything they have in them into this, because it's that important. And and that's I think that's all we can do.
Thank you, Anthony. I have I failed to mention this to our presenters, but this isn't going to be like a regular soapbox where I ask questions. I just like want the presenters to go ahead with their program or with what they want to say, and then we'll save questions and comments for the end. So if anybody who's participating in the call thought of something while Anthony was speaking to ask a question or make a comment, then just write it down and save it towards the end. So Anthony, thank you so much for your comments and for your work and for your courage and everything that you do. And I'm going to be asking Rose Brown to unmute her phone now because she's next. And the other day, while she's unmuting her phone, the other day I wrote a Facebook status, something like, I wish some people were as upset with what Obama is actually doing by bombing, 23,144 bombs, drone bombing, the prison, the torture facilities are still open, the police state. I wish they were as upset with what Obama does to Muslims as I are about what Trump says about Muslims. And that got quite a good response on Facebook to what Anthony said. it's hypocrisy when people who support Obama and are supporting one of the Democrats now would say, oh, Trump is so terrible because he wants to close the borders to Muslims, which is terrible, but they won't confront what their candidate or what their candidates or the politicians are actually doing. So our next speaker is Rose Brown from the Revolutionary Organization of Labor. And I invited the organization on because this is an election year, in case you guys haven't noticed. This is an election year. All of the energy gets sucked in to this black hole of electoral politics. And how do we as revolutionaries, or how do we as principled anti-war people deal with it in a way that we can perhaps make inroads for our causes? So, Rose.
Good evening. My name is Rose Brown. I'm speaking tonight on behalf of the Revolutionary Organization of Labor USA, which is a revolutionary working class organization that fights for working class power and the elimination of all human exploitation. I'm the assistant editor of the Rail Light newsletter, which is the regular publication of ROL USA. My understanding is that the stated purpose of this call is to formulate an anti-war, anti-empire plan for 2016. I'd like to begin by citing an open letter to February 15th protesters around the world distributed in New York City and elsewhere on February 15th, 2003. This Rail Light statement entitled, "The Enemy is Not War, but Imperialism," pointed out that imperialism is the principal source of war in our era, that social democrats around the world had rallied to oppose war, but not the imperialist system which breeds war. I had the privilege of helping to distribute this statement in New York City, where 500,000 workers of all nationalities had taken to the streets in opposition to the pending U.S. imperialist-led invasion of Iraq. It was one of the best receptions to a revolutionary leaflet that we ever received. The great revolutionary leader Lenin wrote a pamphlet entitled Socialism and War in 1915, before the Russian Revolution, while World War I was waging. He pointed out that socialists have always condemned wars between peoples as barbarous and bestial, that whoever justifies participation in this war, referring to World War I, perpetuates imperialist oppression of nations. But whoever seeks to use the present difficulties of the governments in order to fight for a social revolution is fighting for the real freedom of really all nations, a freedom that can be realized only through socialism. He projected the slogan, turn the imperialist war into a civil war. The only way to stop U.S. imperialist-led war today is for workers and oppressed of the world to fight for power, to take the power away from the imperialists of the world, and especially U.S. imperialism. Now, to get to the Bernie Sanders campaign. Bernie Sanders is an imperialist politician. While he voted against the U.S. going to war in Iraq, he voted multiple times to fund the war. He supported Obama and Clinton in the U.S.-led attack on Libya. He supports the State of Israel in the so-called fight against ISIS in the Middle East. His only difference from other candidates on this last front is that he calls for, quote-unquote, Muslim boots on the ground. However, and I am quoting from an article by Ray Light in the last issue of the Ray Light newsletter called A Revolutionary Approach to Sanders Presidential Campaign, which was posted on Cindy's blog. At the same time, the Sanders campaign makes concrete, positive, mass demands on the U.S. imperialist ruling class. Single-payer universal health care, $15 an hour minimum wage, defense of the public good, free public college tuition, public schools and public post office, etc. Most or all of these campaign demands had already been identified by the Revolutionary Organization of Labor as worthwhile goals of the class struggle around which we are trying to mobilize the working class and the masses. Both within and in conjunction with the Sanders campaign, we can now continue and deepen the political struggle around these demands. Trump and the other Republican Tea Party candidates are moving U.S. society rapidly and decisively toward fascism. Trump's anti-Latino immigrant bashing, Fiorina's spearhead of an anti-woman campaign, the Carson-led anti-Muslim immigrant hysteria. On a positive note, however, the Sanders campaign is moving a segment of the U.S. populace toward opposition to Wall Street rule. If we implement a principal policy using both unity with and struggle against our temporary allies, we can endorse the Sanders petty bourgeois democratic domestic program while ceaselessly opposing and exposing his criminal support for the U.S. empire with its continuous imperialist war and oppression of the peoples of the world. In order to have successful pro-revolutionary united front work with the Sanders campaign, however, it is crucial that we remain constantly mindful that Sanders is no better than the extreme left wing of the imperialist bourgeoisie, and that we have a constant duty to educate the workers and oppressed within the USA and around the world of that fact. The Sanders campaign represents a step, though a small one, by thousands of U.S. workers and of the 99%, including some youth, toward open revolt, toward quote-unquote socialist revolution. ROL and the handful of other proletarian revolutionaries in the USA have a responsibility to help the class and the masses to continue on this revolutionary path to workers' power and socialism. In order to end U.S. imperialist war, the U.S. workers and oppressed nationalities need to be mobilized in their masses. We believe that critical support of the Bernie Sanders campaign for president, not of Bernie Sanders the politician, can be an important part of this mass education on the road to workers' power and a socialist USA and ending U.S. imperialist-led war. Finally, I'd like to add that I believe that the hope of developing a serious plan to fight U.S. imperialism and the empire on a phone call is wishful thinking. It would even be difficult to build an anti-U.S. imperialist coalition in this way. However, my revolutionary organization of labor is willing to work together with any other serious forces to build such a movement on the road to workers' power, socialism, and an end to imperialist war. Thank you.
Thank you, Rose. I'm going to ask Deborah to unmute her phone. I didn't think that we were going to end imperialism tonight, but there's very little conversation happening around this. So the soapbox is a vehicle that I have to spread the word, to get news out, to organize, and to, you know, try to do something positive. And, you know, the Sanders campaign might be considered a step in the right direction, but at least we're trying to make a step in the right direction. And, you know, we're trying to affiliate with people that might not be revolutionary, socialist or communist, but might also be against empire. And I think it's going to take all of us. There's Deborah Sweet is our next speaker. Deborah Sweet is the National Director of World Can't Wait. Deborah has been a friend of mine for a very long time, and she's remained one of my friends during these 8 long, lonely years of the Obama administration, because her organization and their goals and their activities over the last, since the Bush regime, have been very principled, very anti-war, very anti-empire, very anti-police state. And one thing I have to say is it used to be World Can't Wait drive out the Bush regime. Mm. Well, the Bush regime is gone, but the Bush policies remain, and I'm very glad that Deborah Sweet and World Can't Wait have remained. So, Deborah, you're on.
All right. Thanks, sis.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was thinking about that very point today, because when Obama announced his plan to not close Guantanamo yesterday, it was pointed out that he's had Guantanamo longer than Bush had Guantanamo. And that's pretty sobering when you think about it, that all of what we were talking about in 2007 and 2008, and I think Anthony brought some of this up, has come to pass even worse. We were thinking about, well, I don't know, our organization lost 90% of its donations in 2007 and 2008. Why? Because people decided the way to drive out the Bush regime was to elect Obama, mainly. Mainly it went to Obama. And at that point, it was, I remember talking to Cindy about this. People are going to get very confused, because you're going to have a allegedly anti-war president in power, and he's going to be able to do all the things he's actually done to develop and expand secret operations and targeted assassination by drones in ways that we could not have imagined years ago. And Cindy's absolutely right with the numbers of bombs that have been dropped. But then you look at the numbers of people who have been killed continually, and I think it was you, Cindy, that said the numbers in Afghanistan are going up every year. The numbers of civilians killed, and the U.S. is still there. So we have a very, very sharp sense, I think. I'm certain the people on this call have a sharp sense that this is completely intolerable, immoral, and unjust, and it's pretty interesting. As I see it, I just came from the meeting of the War Resisters League here in New York. We're planning March 19th and 20th the anniversary, this will be 13 years since Jacques and I, we were planning a protest, and we were laughing because who's in the room? The Catholic workers, the pacifists, the communists, and very few other people. All the people for whom this is now clearly a very sharply moral issue. And it is not good that the anti-war movement is so very small compared to what it was in 2015, when we actually had 1 million people on February 15th, 2003, next to the UN. Those people mostly went home once the war started, which was a very, very sobering lesson. Not to mention that when Obama took the war over and did a surge and brought 30,000 more troops into Afghanistan in particular, people largely accepted it. This has been a huge challenge to those of us who do understand this is not just a question of what politician is in power. This is a system. And, you know, I am completely horrified and in great disagreement with the idea that anyone calling themselves a revolutionary or against empire or even a progressive person, for that matter, would get involved in the Sanders campaign as a way of organizing people for something that was worthwhile. And I want to quote, I just want to put this out to people and quote Bob Avakian, the leader of the Revolutionary Communist Party, who is leading a movement for revolution in this country, that in the case of bourgeois elections, if they draw you in, they win. If they get us in there on the terms that Bernie is talking about, there's nothing good, of course, there's nothing good about his foreign policy, but there's also nothing good about his domestic policy. He's telling people, oh yes, we should all have a piece of the pie. Where do people think that pie comes from? This comes from the system of imperialism exploiting the rest of the world. That child labor, that Nike soccer ball that's sewed together by children, that is part of this system that the biggest military in the history of the world is defending. So there's no reason for us, absolutely no reason, to get sucked into the fiction that there's something good about people demanding, we want a piece of the pie for American workers. It's been a big problem for decades and decades in this country. I am thinking, personally, not about 350 million people who happen to live in the United States. I'm thinking about the 7 billion. And I really want to challenge everybody on this call to constantly think about the 7 billion. What is it going to take to transform not just this country, this society, but the whole globe? A big part of that would be, on our part, stopping what the U.S. is doing. I'll give you that. That's very important. We have to stop the war crimes carried out in our name, and we can do that on a very potentially broad basis. I know Lisa Savage, and I know that she's saying something true about what has entranced a lot of younger people right now. There's a couple of movements. One is the movement to save the earth. Another one is the movement to stop murder by police, the Black Lives Matter movement. And the third one is for the rights of immigrants against the deportation. We do have to deeply appreciate and connect all of those matters with something that actually is connected to it, that is stopping U.S. empire. I really I agree with that, and there's a lot of examples on it. But we cannot give up on this generation. They have the capability to understand the crimes that are being carried out. And I want to, we can debate all this, and we should in the question period, but I don't want to fail to put out the very specific call to people. World Can't Wait, along with other groups around the country, are doing local protests on March 19th and 20th, the 13th anniversary of Shock and Awe, and the endless war on Iraq in particular, Syria, Yemen, and now Libya, Afghanistan. 1.3 million people killed by the U.S. since 2001 in that region. We used to say it was 4.5 million people who were driven into internal or external exile from Iraq. Now that figure is probably closer to 15 or 20 million people roaming across Europe. Why? Because of the disruption, the destruction created by the U.S. People do not know that. People living in this country are largely ignorant or ignorant. And it really is on us to have that conversation with people. Visually, social media, yes, by protesting, being in the streets, going into classrooms, doing art, making culture. We really have to change what people feel is acceptable and what they know to be true, even in the face of the barbarous. I'm looking for the right word. I'm very aware of those seven words I can't say. The barbarous mess that comes out of the mouth of every one of these candidates. So that's why our motto in World Can't Wait is humanity and the planet come first. Stop the crimes of your government.
Thank you, Deborah. I'm going to ask Gerald Celente to unmute his phone while I give an introduction to him. Gerald is an American trend forecaster, publisher of the Trends Journal, business consultant, and author who makes predictions about the global financial markets and other events of historical importance. Gerald has described himself as a political atheist and citizen of the world. And why Gerald is on this call is because he also started something called Occupy Peace. And I was invited and thrilled to go to upstate New York to be at the kickoff rally for that. And I'd like to invite Gerald to tell my listeners and the participants in the call about Occupy Peace.
Thanks for having me on, Cindy. And I'd just like to make a couple of comments on some of the things that were said before I move on. And beginning with Anthony Frieda, who was also here at Occupy Peace and does illustrations for us in the Trends Journal, about rebranding peace movement, because it is associated with people that, you know, it's peace and love, and it doesn't go much further than that. And right now there's not a peep about peace among any of the candidates, nor in the media. And I was just at a funeral service yesterday in a Catholic church in Bayside, Queens. And afterwards, they had a little gathering afterwards, and the priest was there. And I said to him, you spoke a lot about, use the word peace a lot in what you were talking about. And, you know, it just comes up in the prayers all the time. I said, the Pope came out against Trump for putting wanting a barrier up between Mexico and United States, and said that wasn't very Christian. I said, where's the Catholic Church speaking out against the wars going on? I said, if the Church came out against wars that really started going after these politicians that called themselves Christians. I said, you'd have a movement going on. And he was very open to it. We're going to get together at another time. And I have another friend that's a Catholic priest that also wants to get this moving. Because if it came really in the context of a serious religious movement, it would galvanize a big segment. But that's just one part of it on what Anthony was saying about rebranding it. And on what Rose was saying about Bernie Sanders, I mean, it goes on. Bernie was a key supporter of Bill Clinton's murderous war in Kosovo, got people arrested when they protested against it. He's moving F-35s up into the Burlington airport. Wonderful. And he voted to fund just about every war, and also co-sponsored a Senate resolution for Gaddafi to stand down, supports what's going on in Ukraine. And, you know, to me, it's just another of lesser of two evils, but I don't think he's going anywhere anyway. But that kind of thinking, I agree with what Deborah said about Bernie Sanders, is that, you know, you just don't, you know, take that part of it and ignore it and move on to the other part of it, what you like about him. So, Occupy Peace, and I think, just to give you a quick background, I began my career running political campaigns in Westchester County back in the early 70s at a graduate school. I was a real pro at it, and of course Westchester was the richest county in the United States at the time, probably still is. They sent me up to Albany. I was the assistant to the Secretary of the New York State Senate. And I designed and instructed American Politics and Campaign Technology at St. John's University. And I was a Chief Government Affairs Specialist for the chemical industry through 6 years. Between D.C. and Chicago. And one of my writers is Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, a contributor to the Trends Journal. We're guys that have been there, know pretty much how the system works. With all due respect, the protests aren't working. And I believe Deborah said, to paraphrase her, not to quote her, I was just writing notes, that after the protest, the million-some-odd people, most people went home afterwards. And that's what happens with protests. People, you know, they go to the malls, down with us, the Washington Mall, they protest, yell and scream against it, but there's no action plan to move it forward. And with Occupy Peace, we put together an action plan. And it's a conceivable action plan. It's implemented. Number one, to close all the military bases overseas. And as you mentioned, Cindy, you came to Kingston, New York, upstate, where we launched it. We launched it here for two purposes. One, that we're here. But we launched it at the most historic four corners in the United States. The only place where there's a pre-Revolutionary War stone building on each corner. And the founding fathers, beginning with George Washington, a real fighter, a warrior, you know, we could go all the bads, the negatives, the goods, the positives, but the fact is, this guy, you know, he was a real commander-in-chief, not these little boys that can't fight, that call themselves that. And his farewell address was no foreign entanglements. And the world was at war back then, big time. If anybody ever forgets Napoleon's march to Moscow, he left with 423,000 men from Poland and came back with 10,000. And whether it was Jefferson, Madison, Adams, Franklin, every one of the founding fathers, no foreign entanglements. It's very clear. So that's one of the missions of Occupy Peace. Bring home the troops, put them to work rebuilding our rotted infrastructure, secure the homeland. Next step, force Congress to vote to go to war. We're in Syria. We're in Iraq. We're in Afghanistan. We're in Sudan. We're in Mali. We have no right being in any of those places without Congress voting to go to war, which they have not voted for since World War II. Instead, they give El Presidente, who's ever in power, the easy card, the easy pass to start a war and do what the president feels like. So we're going to demand they live by the Constitution. And finally, we want to put on each ballot in each state a referendum that when Congress votes, we will tell Congress how to vote because they represent us. And supposedly, but they really don't. And we're the ones that pay for the war with our money and our lives. So, to me, it's an action plan. The protests have not worked. People do with all the greatest intentions. Right up here in Woodstock, every week the women in black go out. I go up to Hudson, another town. Every week they're protesting. I go to Rhinebeck. They stand on the corner every week. It's not working. We need a unified action plan. That plan that we propose, we're open to any plan, but we need a plan. And we're not going to depend on any politician to tell us what to do or how to do it. And it's up to us, we the people, to set the agenda. And you mentioned I'm a political atheist. I do not believe in Republicans or Democrats. They're the Bloods and the Crips to me. They're murderers and thieves. The number that that was given out about how many people America's killed. I just read another report, Deborah, that it's over a million already in Afghanistan, and this year is a record-breaking year for dead Afghans, and most of the people coming into Europe now through Greece and Macedonia, a third of them are Afghans. So as these wars go on, nobody's talking about why the refugee crisis has happened. So to sum it all up, I believe that we need a unified voice and a unified movement. And without it, and by the way, another thing when Ralph Nader was here, we both talked about it. We need money to do this. We took out my business partner and myself out of our business. We put in almost $150,000 of our own money. And I'm a working guy. I went into my retirement fund to fund some of that movement. So we need a movement with an action plan. And as far as relying on the younger people, you know, we have to rely on us. Again, you think about the founding fathers. You know, the older you get, hopefully the wiser you get. It's up to us to lead the movement, and they'll follow, just like they're following Bernie. So that's it, Cindy.
That's an excellent point, Gerald, the last thing you said. So now this is the time where the call could get messy because I'm going to ask, I think that the speakers all made wonderful points, and we had a diversity of presentations, which I think is wonderful, and there's so few of us who are principled against empire that I do think we have to work together as much as possible towards this end. And it's not, when the empire is going to collapse, there's no doubt about it, because all empires collapse. And you know, many people think that the United States Empire is in its end stages right now, but how do we be there, and how do we you respond to that when it happens? But also, how can we stick to our principles, go forward the way we're going, but foster some kind of movement that goes along with us? And to think that we have to get a Republican in office to do that, first of all, it scares me and it pisses me off, because people are against
use that word.
Can we say piss? Oh, well. we said it. We can, you know, be principled no matter who's in office. And it just really, Anthony said, calling someone a hypocrite is not comfortable. But that's exactly the definition of hypocrisy, is to be against wars when a Republican is president, but kind of look the other way when a Democrat is president. So I'm going to ask any of our listeners to, if you have a question or a comment, to say as much of your name as you want and where you're from and make that question or comment, and we'll try to sort it out where it won't be too messy or too many people talking at once. Do we have somebody?
Yeah, this is Rusty.
Hi, Rusty. Rusty from Texas?
Yeah, Amarillo, Texas. And I'm very impressed with what we heard tonight. I've got a couple comments. Anthony Prater was talking about rebranding the movement. And I think one thing's very important, what Deborah said, you know, war is not the problem, imperialism is, but it, going anti-war is like treating the symptoms. You got to get down and treat the cause, which I think is a big cause of a present situation is corporate greed. I'm running a campaign against the congressman here, who's the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, and he's received over $1 million, and his top donors are Northrop Grumman, Boeing, and four out of the top six donors are defense contractors. And, you know, we got to turn attention to the corporate cause of the disease of war. And Gerald, I'm sorry I don't know his last name, but I like what he said about an action plan. We said, you know, you go out and protest, and everybody goes home. And then you plan something else. We need to start, exactly like you said, we need to plan like 2 or 3 years ahead what we're going to be doing. You know, not because of concrete, it'd be flexible according to what happens. But we need to have, you know, each little action, and I use that action word to mean, you know, I've read there are 180 different types of activism, would be working towards an objective. And each objective would take us towards a final goal. We need long-range planning, I like that. And I really appreciate being part of this discussion, and it's very educational for me, and I thank you.
Thank you, Rusty. Rusty is a good friend of mine. He hosted Tour de Peace 3 years ago when we were on Route 66 going through Amarillo. Rusty had some events for us and had places for us to stay. That's when I rode my bike from California to Washington, D.C. So does anybody else have any other participants have a question or comment?
This is Ray Almedis. I'm in Marshall, Texas. And I'd like to make an observation. This is kind of off the cuff because I haven't really given it a lot of thought. I don't disagree with anything that I've heard any of the speakers say tonight. And I would focus most on the need to overcome imperialism as a root cause of the issue. All the other problems that we have had mentioned are all just extensions of the root problem of imperialism. Including, you know, corporate greed and what have you. But in talking about how to approach the issue of mobilizing, I'd like to go back. I think it sounds like most everybody here was on the streets in the 60s, and I was too. And there was a different spirit at that time. And I think everybody can remember Mario Savio talking about throwing a body on the wheels of the machine, bringing the gears to a grinding stop. And during the 60s, that's what people did, as much as we possibly could, And there was a large movement of people, and it did accomplish a lot of what it set out to do, including civil rights and stopping the Vietnam War, what have you. And, of course, it did go to sleep. But there was a brief resurgence in 2003 with the anti-war protest march, global anti-protest, anti-war march, and then it went away. And in terms of why are we not mobilizing, I think better strategies and naming problems and calling out problems isn't going to get to the issue. And the issue is, where did the spirit go? How did the spirit of confrontation become cynical and make people willing to say, yeah, I recognize the problem, what's on TV? And I think that's, in terms of creating change, any kind of change, revising the system isn't going to work. The system has to be replaced, and revolution does have to be accomplished in one fashion or another. But you're not going to get revolution until you get foot soldiers, and I don't see anybody lining up to be recruited. And the question is why? And that, I think, is one place where people of the caliber that are on this phone call would hopefully direct some of their attention as to why are we not reaching the people we have to reach. Because until we do that, everything else is just talk.
And I can I comment, Cindy?
I think
yeah.
That's what I have to say.
Yeah. First of all, you know, I'm of that age. You know, I was 64. I'll be 70 years old. So I'm Vietnam War era. The reason people were protesting back then, very simple. All the guys were getting drafted. There's no draft. There's no movement. And it didn't stop the war. The war didn't end until the early 1970s, when America started running out of money and guys started rebelling on the field. So these protests don't work. The people go home and there's no fight back. And what we're saying, and again, we're not taking ownership of anything. We're just saying we need an action plan. And it's one step at a time. You're not going to bring down the whole system. Is it imperialism, or is it what Anthony Frieda said? They're psychopaths and sociopaths. Why can't people call a spade a spade? Why do you have to make something else around it and not call it what it is? So is it for greed and wealth, or is it to fulfill a sick desire? And to me, that's what I see. I just see a bunch of sick people who I used to know when I used to be in the circle of the government. So it's not, you know, to look back at the 60s and glorify them. You know, let's put it back into perspective. The draft was going on, and your life was on the line, and that's why you fought for it. When you're just sending other kids who are going there for a job opportunity because they can't find another piece of work, then you're not going to have any protests.
I just want to have an aside about Vietnam. I wasn't in the streets because I was still in elementary school, but the Vietnam resistance gets very little credit for ending that war. I just want to speak up.
It didn't end the war. It ended when the country was going broke. They took us off the gold standard to try to pay for this thing. And I know it was starting to revolt against the commanders. They tell the guys to go out and do something. The guys would tell them, you go do it. I'm not going to do it. You know, so that's what happened. It was rebellion on the battlefield and running out of money.
From the Vietnamese and the soldiers.
Gerald, I'm not going to disagree with a lot of what you said, but I think your viewpoint is cynical.
No. Don't use those kind of words. Just put out the fact. Don't be derogatory and put a label on me.
Can I get a word in?
I want to correct you for using a word to describe what I'm saying. Well, let's just talk about the facts.
Well, I think the facts are that the anti-war protest galvanized American society to take issue with the dictates of the government And certainly things like running out of money were important. I think there was a lot more to the anti-war protests than people being afraid of being sent to Vietnam. I was exempted from the draft, but I wasn't exempted from social consciousness.
Well, then you weren't. Then if you were exempted from the draft, you don't know what it feels like.
And when kids start coming home in body bags in numbers too great for the society to ignore, they began asking questions about why were we doing this, and then it could not be sustained, that among other things. But this is a peripheral issue to this, to what I think is the central issue. And the central issue is, while I certainly agree you need to have a plan, and everything you said has been, you know, right and appropriate, but the real question is, why are the masses of kids nowadays not involved?
And I'm saying the reason they're not involved is because your life isn't on the line. And every day you wake up and you say, are they going to get me? How can I avoid it? What am I going to do? You had an exemption. You don't know what it felt like.
How do we get them involved? Reinstate the draft?
No. You have to go through it. You're not going to get them involved. They got involved out of fear. They've got a fear of your life is going to be taken away from you. So you're not going to get them involved on another issue. Just as I had mentioned, they follow up Bernie Sanders because of promises that he's giving them. I'm going to give you free tuition. I'm going to get rid of your debt. You have to give them a promise of a future, and the future isn't one where we're going to spend all our money fighting in foreign entanglements as our country is going down the drain. And you're only going to get a small group of those. But again, it does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority keen on setting brush fires of freedom in the minds of men, as Samuel Adams said. So you're not going to get a mass movement from the millennials.
Can we? We have about 5 more minutes left, and I want to see. Thank you. I want to see if anybody else has a comment or a question that hasn't spoken yet.
Hey, Cindy, it's Chris in Houston.
Hey, Chris. Texas is well represented.
Yeah, it is. We're repping Texas here. Not all of us are, redneck lunatics in this state, but. Anyway, I agree with much of what Gerald Celente has to say. During NOM, people had skin in the game. When the troops started fragging the officers, that turned a lot of things around. And when the money ran out, as he said, we don't have a draft now. It's an all-volunteer military. So these kids, you know, join up because they think they're going to get, you know, college on the GI Bill. And basically, the military takes care of their every need while they're in there. And, you know, if they complain, it's like, well, why are you complaining? You volunteered. You know what I mean? So
it's a poverty draft, too, right? There is a lot of working class poor people that feel that, you know, like my son, that felt, you know, there was very little options at that point.
But, you know, I think I don't have a problem labeling myself as a cynic. I am a cynic, and a cynic is a very disappointed idealist. I'm cynical as hell. I don't know if that's one of the 6 words you can't use. I have plenty of others. So, yeah, all right, good. But, I know plenty of others that can't be said on this telephone. But people are not, by and large, affected directly by anything that's going on. They're not hurting enough in this country. Now, don't anybody jump in, crawl me, when you say, well, there's plenty of poor people. People go to bed hungry. They're homeless people, yada, yada, yada. I'm talking about middle-class America, even, you know, a lot of the working class, so long as they, you know, can get their 3 squares a day or 2 squares a day, and they have their TV, and, you know, they have a job, whatever that may be, this stuff that's going on all over the world in the Middle East is not affecting them directly. Okay, they're not hurting. They're not hurting badly enough to do anything. You know, I've talked about in the past. a general strike. Well, we really don't have unions anymore, so people are afraid to not go to work, to go on strike, because there's 10 other people lined up behind them ready to take their job if they decide they don't want to go to work, okay? War tax resistance. My husband and I tried that once. We didn't pay, I think it was 20-some-odd percent of the money we owed Uncle Sam that went to pay for past wars and the war in Iraq. Well, do you remember when we got that so-called stimulus check that the idiot Bush, I think, you know, promised everybody? They, you know, we wrote a letter saying why we weren't going to pay, I believe it was 28% of the taxes they said that we owed. And they sent us a letter back and said it was frivolous.
Mm-hmm.
And our reason was we don't agree with bombing people in other countries. So they, you know, we went back and forth with these letters, and they finally took the entire stimulus check that we had coming to us, you know, plus interest and penalties. And my husband's a retired educator, so if we were to do that again, they would either garnish his wages, his retirement check, once a month. He gets one retirement check every month from the school system. Or they'd take, you know, the crappy little amount of Social Security that he gets, which, by the way, is $48 a month. For those of you that don't realize it, retired teachers in Texas don't get Social Security. So basically, over the course of the last 13 years that my husband's been retired, they've stolen roughly $40,000 from us. Legal wage theft, because he worked for 15 years in the private sector before he became a teacher and then a guidance counselor. So, you know, if we try to resist paying taxes, yeah, they have other ways of getting the money that they think that you owe them, okay? And, you know, what else? General strike, don't pay your taxes. You know, there are other things that people have, you know, come up with that we could do to resist imperialism and resist. But, you know, most people are completely game bred, I like to say, brain dead, you know. They've been born into capitalism. This is the only system they know. Socialism to them is a dirty word. Anarcho-communitarianism, they don't even know what the hell that is, okay? They don't know what it is. They associate anarchy with nothing but chaos as opposed to voluntarism. They don't know what it is. They don't want to know what it is. And frankly, it probably wouldn't even work in this country unless we were consolidated into small villages or towns, okay? So I get that. I don't even trust the socialist government because, frankly, I don't even trust the workers. All right, you give people a little bit of power, it goes straight to their heads, okay? So if we did have any kind of socialism, I would definitely be for strict term limits, and I'm also for instant recall should somebody start screwing up, and referendum. All right, now Ron and I, my husband and I, are going to go to a meeting for whatever reason, Friday night at 6 p.m. with David Cobb. I know you know who he is. He ran for president on the Green Party ticket. David is going to be talking about trying to get some sort of a constitutional amendment passed in order to overturn Citizens United. But in order to do that, you've got to get two-thirds of the state to ratify that. You've got to have, I think, 30 out of the 50 states to be able to do that, just so we can get public financing of elections so that we can have a freaking parliamentary system in this country instead of the left wing and the right wing of the fascist party, which is what we've got. We're not careening toward fascism, people. We are freaking under a fascist regime, and we have been for many, many years now. People don't like to hear that word either. They got their head firmly in the sand, okay? When corporations and the government are in bed together and making all the decisions, that is fascism, pure, plain, and simple, all right? So, you know, is anything that we do or anybody else could do going to change anything? Doubtful. Now, if you want to do something on the local level, you want to try to form a cooperative, worker-owned cooperatives, which are much more democratic, even than small businesses where you have a boss who's telling everybody else under him what to do, all right? You could do that. You can support community gardens, okay? You can try to come up with alternate currencies, all right, and find businesses that will accept that in your neighborhood. So, you know, We either, and I firmly believe I agree with you, this system's going to implode. When it's going to implode, I've been waiting for years now for it to implode, and somehow the Fed just keeps printing off the, you know, fiat currency, and it never happens, so I don't know when it's going to happen. But unless we go around this fascist, you know, corporate capitalist system and try to create something different that's more egalitarian, and Democratic. I don't see much hope for anything. You stand out there and scream till you're blue in the face about being against idiot Bush, Cheney administration, and the Obama administration, Mr. Hope and Change, which, by the way, I'm happy to say I never bought any of his BS all those years ago. All you had to do was listen to what the man had to say and look up the junior senator from Illinois' voting record to see how he voted when he's in Congress. And how in the hell does a junior senator become president anyway unless he's vetted by the corporate powers that be in Wall Street? Come on, people. You know, this ain't rocket science. So, and then Bernie Sanders is Hope and Change Redux. That's all this is.
Chris, I'm going to have to stop you. That's very good rant you had there. It was very, you got on your soapbox, which is what this is for. And I'm going to give it somebody else a chance to respond or comment or whatever. If you want to stay on the call, I'll stay on the call if anybody else has any comments.
This is Rail in Texas back again. I just want to say right on to the last lady that was talking, and we should have done this on a trunk call because we're all in Texas.
I know, huh? we got our, my great state of Texas represented there. I never, ever dreamed I would spend so much time in Texas.
It's not a bad place except for the rednecks.
Well, and the fire ants and the heat and...
But can I say something about that too, though, Cindy? You know, one of my favorite writers who is now deceased is Joe Bajan. Joe Bajan. I don't know if you've ever heard of Joe Bajan.
Yeah.
He wrote Deer Hunting with Jesus and Rainbow Pie. You know, the thing about it is that the Democrats threw, and you know, you say rednecks, but you know, I lived in Louisiana for almost 20 years in North Louisiana. Didn't have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of. And so I know what it's like to have to live from paycheck to paycheck and wonder how I'm going to feed my two kids. All right? So the Democrats threw poor white folks overboard 30, 40 years ago. All right? So the Republicans come in and they fill the vacuum, okay? These people have been impoverished, but they can always say the poor white folks, say, well, at least I'm not black, okay? And so the Republicans feed on this racial prejudice, the fear of the other,
right.
And they know that poor whites are hurting, and so they play into that, the religiosity of these people, and that's how they're able, that's why these people vote against their economic self-interest, even though really there's nobody to vote for anymore because the Democrats are in bed with the self-fund corporations in Wall Street that the three thugs are. So, you know, what I'm saying is we all can, you know, sort of laugh and sneer and turn up our noses at what we think are ignorant, poor white folks. I used to be one. Used to vote Republican years ago, 20 years ago. But nobody is addressing the plight of poor working whites, just like the plight of working and poor people of color is not being addressed. So we're all in the same boat, okay? But, you know, they have done a really great job of divide and conquer, okay? They get white folks to hate on black folks hate on Latinos, and then hate on, you know, Chinese because they think people overseas are taking their jobs away from them. Well, you should be hating on the ones at the very top, the filthy, stinking rich who are getting richer and putting their money in offshore tax havens and laughing all the way to their stockbroker's office, all right? So how do you get that message across to people? You know, I mean, you have to actually go into these neighborhoods where these people live, but, you know, if you didn't get shot first, they might well listen to you, especially if you've ever walked in their shoes, which I have.
All right, I'm going to see if there's anybody from another state that wants to jump in on the conversation.
Yeah, don't get a text and talking.
I just want to say hi before I go to bed at 3 o'clock here in the UK.
Oh, God.
Oh, wow.
That must be Sarah.
Yeah, I'm an American living on the Isle of Wight in the UK, and I feel like I'm fighting all this on both fronts because the same stuff's going on here. Different, same monster, different interpretation of it. And we're fighting fracking on a national level, and it's looking really bleak, and it's good to know you guys are out there. It was great being a part of it, but I have to go to bed.
Good night, Sarah. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Have a good night.
It's only 7.
Sarah, before you go to Pat, would you give us a thumbnail on what you think Corbyn's chances of accomplishing anything are?
I live in hope, because I don't like the way it looks here either.
Hope's north of me. Hope's north of me in Arkansas.
my kids are living in Rochester, New York, still, and they're in their 20s. And I want so much more for them than what I'm seeing right now. And when I watch the debates and the stuff on, you know, that I stay up late to catch from over there, I'm, like, mortified. I'm like, you know, you hate to say just when it couldn't get any worse. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a nightmare. And then over here, the poverty and the lack of jobs, it's the same mess. It's the same mess. And the apathy and the people that don't want to know and are burying their heads in the sand. I mean, I'm trying to get involved in things over here, and people, you try to bring up a conversation with a taxi driver, do you know they're about to frack the Isle of Wight? And they're like, no, what does that mean? It's like, oh my God. But, yeah, there's a lot of people that like Corbyn. There's, they pretty much hate what's in power now, everybody you talk to. You know, the average working or non-working person. But, yeah, I just want to let you know it's not a heck of a lot different over here. So, and with that, I will let you go.
Good night or good morning.
Take care.
Okay, so we heard from Texas and Great Britain.
How about New York?
And besides our presenters.
Hello.
I'm going to give another chance for someone to speak.
Hello, can you hear me? This is Bob from Park Forest, Illinois.
Oh, Bob, I can barely hear you.
Okay, I'll speak louder. This is Bob Colbert from Park Forest, Illinois. And I, of course, appreciate everything everybody said. And as far as getting more people involved, when there's more veterans who protest and there's former drone operators who protest and they get the attention, which is a huge problem, people listen, and I think that could have a greater impact and help achieve those 3 points that were mentioned. And then I have a closing military bases overseas. That's pretty much all I have to add. Just people like Bradley Manning, well, even Cindy too. When you were getting a lot of attention nationally, and in Chicago there was a protest when Obama brought his NATO friends over here, that created a huge that received a lot of attention, and it did have an impact in that it brought the attention of universal health care to a lot of people that didn't even consider that, because there's a national nurses group there that was participated. And when Deborah Sweet tries to bring Danny Worthington to town, and also tries to get more veterans to appear with She was involved, I think, in that group and different groups that wanted to get the war veterans and to appear in front of local school boards. Stuff like that does have an impact. I know it's slow and incremental, but, you know, it's saving a few kids.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, anybody else?
It's Deborah. Could I have one more?
Yes, of course.
Well, this is just food for thought. We can't solve this, and I appreciate that, but I really love the fact that people are thinking so deeply about what's the basic problem. I do not think the basic problem is the psychopathy of the leaders. They may be psychopaths, but there's a system operating in here that is bigger than whoever is put in power, and there's a lot of tension at the top right now. Yeah. I think we should not fail to appreciate what this means, that the Supreme Court is going to go on 8 members because they literally won't let Obama and I'm not standing up for Obama, but they won't let Obama even nominate somebody.
Right.
There are some real fascist elements here. And, you know, there's all kinds of possibilities, but I really think people should think very carefully about when saying revolution is not possible, big change and a lot of people being in the streets, which would be an essential part of a revolution, would be a situation where you had masses and masses of people who were essentially uncontrollable. And then to accomplish something, you would really need a plan and leadership, of course. But there's something very strange afoot right here when you have Trump, who people really discounted 6 months ago, doing what he's doing and pulling in this almost inchoate anxiety and anger that people have against the status quo and being able to stand as if he is in opposition to the status quo. It's very disturbing. I'm not saying it's not disturbing, but you just got to look at that and say this is a very unstable situation. And within that situation, people like us who are putting out, you know, coming from the different places we're coming from, who are putting out a consistent moral position that what the U.S. is doing around the world is wrong, could be very decisive in a situation like this. We really have to stay together, pull more people into thinking like this, and keep working on it. Cindy, and I want to just close my comments by saying, not only as a friend, but as somebody who is really a fly in the ointment, Cindy, for all these years now, we're going on 12 years and 6 weeks since Casey was killed. You know, Cindy has really not just stuck to her principles, but she hasn't settled. She hasn't settled for the craziness of this and for the basic injustice, and that's really a gift to people, and I'm just telling you that, Cindy.
Thank you.
I want other people to witness it. Can I get an amen?
Amen. You got one for me.
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen from Texas.
I'm an atheist, but, you know, I agree with it, Cindy. You know, I don't say amen. I'm an atheist.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's a good way to end the call, by recognizing my greatness. I'm just kidding.
Oh, my God.
But what Deborah said, you know, is that never giving up and, you know, always moving forward. And sometimes we don't go in the right direction, but, you know, that's why we need solidarity and we need commitment from people who are putting out this consistent message. And I really want to thank all of you for sticking on the call for an hour and a half, for the great presenters and great comments that we've had. And this show will be available on Sunday. And I appreciate it if you would post it and send it out to all your networks, because I think it was a really valuable conversation on, we try to do something, we try to keep doing things, and you know, sometimes we're more successful than other times, but people always ask me, why don't you ever give up? Why don't you get frustrated? Of course I get frustrated. I get frustrated every day, but we just can't give up. The people, like Deborah says, 7 billion, recognize 7 billion people on this planet have the same existential right as 350 million Americans. We're needed and our voices are needed, and I appreciate all of you and I appreciate all your voices. So this is Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Peace out for now.